Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 11, delivered on September 30, 2015. The title of this lecture is Bond Price Dynamics.
Today, bond price dynamics. Write that down. It looks really cool in your notes. Bond price dynamics. This is kind of a little bit of a cleanup lecture, and I'm going to specifically target a few of the problems that you will see in the quiz and test for Chapter 6, just to give you a little bit of a boost on them. Nothing major. They're not really complicated, but just take your time, do it once, and bomb it, and then you can go back and say, well, I'll try it again now that I know what I'm supposed to do. But look, let me start with a couple of quick qualifiers. One of them is that there's a term in the book that the book uses a very specific definition for, but it's actually a broader term that's used in a lot of different ways in business, in finance, in commerce. The term spot. Now, where I first learned about the term, I mean, you know, you have all of this college education in business, and then you find out about all these terms that are out there that you never heard about. The first place I heard the use of the term spot was in the oil industry. When we were doing oil and gas exploration and exploitation out in Texas in the patch, we'd punch a well, we might get some oil flowing, nothing, no gushers or anything, but we might get enough so that we could have a Coqueline truck come around every week and pull it out of the reserve tanks. And we had a choice of whether we were going to go with spot or with a contract. Now, spot meant that we would take whatever the prevailing price was that at the time that the driver came and got our oil. So if prices were up, well, a spot would be great. But if spot prices were down, spot would suck. The other way we could do it is to contract forward. Say a six-month contract at a guaranteed price on every pickup. And it kind of was like a difficult decision sometimes. Well, if we buy spot, we would gain the advantage of getting, if prices of oil go through the roof, that would be great. But we're also going to get creamed if oil prices go down on the benchmarks. But the forward, there was that certainty. We knew what we were going to get, but it wasn't great. It was actually kind of like, geez, that's all we get if we go forward, forward contract for 6 months with you? Yeah, that's all you get. And so that term spot meant the now, what it is at now, the price. Now, I heard the term in other situations too, and it always carries that idea of now. So the book brings up the term with respect to interest rates. If I were to calculate the yield on a one-year T-bill, in other words, if I were to say that the price right now is, let's say, 987.48. Let's see if I got a better marker here than this one. That one's terrible, but it looks like someone has swiped my markers again. God, that really irritates the hell out of me. Anyway, I don't have any other markers. Okay, I can't even see where that is. 987.48. Now, if you were to crank through the grinder on that, what I would do is I would take 1,000 minus 987.48. And what I would get is that I would earn interest of $12.52 divided by my investment of 987.40. Is that 987.48? 987.48. 987.48. So my interest, my yield would be 1.27% on that. Yield 9.27% on that. Is that, well, rather 1.27%, yeah. Okay. That's a spot. Okay. That's spot in the terms of yields. It's a now rate on the now price. So quote me spot 1.27. Now, another term that is very common in finance is the term spread. And we're not talking about, I can't believe it's butter. That's a spread. And it's pretty good. You know, I've eaten it and I've said, I can't believe this isn't butter. This is a spread. That the term spread means simply the difference between two prices or between two numbers. In finance, we will oftentimes use the term credit spread. So let me show you an example of a credit spread. And I'm going to just pull up yield on AAA. No. Yeah, well, let me do that one. Composite bond rates. Now, here's a U.S. Treasury bond. A 30-year has right now spot 2.84%. I'm looking at Muni. Okay. Well, hell, they don't have 30. I'm going to have to go to a 20-year. Let me go 20-year on a, okay, Can I do it there? Here? Would that be okay? Okay, yeah, there we go. Let me look at a 10-year treasury, spot 2.02, okay? The 10-year spot is 2.02%. On the treasury. And this is 10-year. This is a 10-year piece of paper. Now let me go down here and I'm going to show you this 10-year high grade AAA corporate. Right now the composite average is 2.48. This really. AAA corporate. 10-year. There's got to be. Hey. Someone swiped all of the good marker. So I am stuck with this dog. Anyway, the credit spread there is we would say 46 basis points. The credit spread on the 10-year is 46 basis points. Again, the credit spread on the 10-year is 46 basis points. In other words, there is it's a maturity premium of 0.46% that you get by buying a corporate bond and the higher risk of a corporate bond over a treasury, which would be essentially risk-free except for its maturity, except for the maturity premium. So I shouldn't say it that way. That's actually a default premium, probably, but most of it is. But anyway, if you compare exact maturities of treasuries against corporate, there you go. That's what you're looking at, is that credit spread. And we oftentimes you'll hear it quoted in basis points, okay? In other words, out of 100. So again, I would say my spread there is 46 basis points. Now, coming back up here, I want to bring up something important to you. Munis, municipals. Now, municipals are historically attractive. And a municipal can mean a lot of things, but it is a debt instrument that is issued by some sovereign authority, a city, a school district, a township. Lots of different munis exist. It's sort of a generic term. They have one thing in common. They are, the interest that you earn on the coupons on munis is not taxed at the federal level. They are, it's essentially attractive as a tax haven vehicle. Historically, it's just that the federal government sees the need of cities to raise money for long-term projects. And in many circumstances, these bonds, the buyers of the bonds, set up these things. Okay, you're going to have this. This is the 20-year tax to upgrade your water system. Okay, well, you're going to put a tax. You have, if we're going to do this for you, sell this this muni, lend you the money for the muni, you're going to have to put a tax on the people who are going to benefit from this that will ensure that the coupons will be paid to us and the face value will be paid off at the end. These tax revenue bonds are so common. School districts, whenever there's a quote-unquote levy on the ballot, that's what it's about. They are asking the voters to allow them to go to the capital markets and borrow the money for something for the schools. And then the property taxes in that case would be increased by a calculated amount that would ensure that muni would be paid off. Now, a couple of things about these, interestingly enough. One problem that has arisen over the years with munis is that they can default. Detroit is a good example. Cleveland many years ago was an example. So they are a little riskier than one might think on first blush, because cities can just collapse financially and then you've got yourself a problem. Let me look at do they have a 10-year muni that's triple A? 1.96. Well, you're saying, well, wait a minute, that's lower than the AAA. I thought you said they were riskier. Yes, they are, but they're also tax exempt. So in other words, the coupon that is paid on a muni is smaller because there's essentially a tax shield in it. So so essentially they don't have to pay as much of a coupon because a corporate bond, you have to pay tax on your interest payments. But so that interest, that coupon on a corporate bond has to have enough extra in it to cover the taxes of the investors who buy it. But a muni doesn't have to carry that extra tax premium. So it can be at a lower rate. However, Those rates have gone up over the years as cities have defaulted. There is great concern that over the next maybe 10 years, 15, 20 years, there are going to be a lot of these munis that will start defaulting. But and also another thing that's going on. Here's the deal. Historically, the Federal Reserve has considered munis to be extraordinarily safe, good things to put for a bank to buy to put in its portfolio of high-tier assets. You buy a bank. Okay, bank, if you buy munis, we're going to count those as your safe capital. So banks, of course, would buy them. The Federal Reserve has just issued new rules that they are no longer considered part of the safe capital of banks. Banks, if you want to buy munis, those don't count toward your safe capital anymore. Well, that essentially means that banks are going to say FTS. They're not going to buy them anymore. They're not going to. So one of the major, huge investors in munis is just going to walk away from them. And that's going to cause a catastrophe for cities that need capital investment. Every city needs capital investment. And a lot of cities need lots of it. School districts, they've got to keep building new schools and all these new technologies that come along. And there is one of the major sources in the capital markets for those is gone, thanks to our Federal Reserve and its new rules. Now, why would the Federal Reserve do this? Well, there are a couple of speculations about it, and not one of them has a bright lining around it. They're all nasty possibilities for why the Fed did it. But there you go. Anyway, that gives you a sort of a flavor for what we mean by credit spread. And credit spreads, interestingly enough, it just kind of irritates me here. I wish they had a AAA 20-year. I mean a 20-year bond, a government bond, but they don't. Well, let me do this. Let me try this. A 5-year treasury spot 1.35%. 5-year AAA corporate 1.50 on the spot. That's a spread of 15. That's a credit spread of 15 basis points. So notice, interestingly enough, the spread is less on the shorter instrument than it is on the longer instrument, because a longer instrument has a longer time in which risk can become reality. Again, a longer time means that risk has more chance of becoming reality. So you'll see the credit spread increase with increasing term of the debt instrument. Again, the credit spread increases with the term of the debt instruments involved. Notice something kind of interesting too here. Let me take that 10-year, that was a 10-year. The credit spread for 10-year on corporate against treasury was 46 basis points. And that was for AAA. Let's look at a double A. In other words, a slightly lower grade, still investment grade, but slightly lower grade. There, you have 3.03%. Holy cow. Well, that's a hellacious. So the credit spread on AA against corporate, against the treasury, is 3.03%. Wow. 101 basis points. In other words, that AA is being spanked. Do you see that bigger spread there on the AA? The AA is like, good grief. It's more than twice this credit spread on the AAA. So that would tell me Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I personally, my portfolio has a combination of AAAs and AAs in it. But that's kind of like, it's leaving me a little bit kind of like feeling a little creepy, because that's a pretty serious little difference. Twice the credit risk, the credit spread on the AAs. Make sure you understand that. The AAA credit spread was 46 basis points. The AA against Treasury credit spread is 101. So in other words, there's a lot higher, and these are both 10 years, so it's not maturity premium, and you can sell any of these, so there's no liquidity premium. That's just pure default premium. That's freaking default premium sitting there on that thing. Yeah, go ahead. No one's decided yields. It's price. Remember, the price is driven. The yield is nothing but an after effect of the price of a debt instrument. And so the buying and selling of these up and down, the price is moving because of supply and demand. That shapes the yields. So what we're seeing is a market-driven assessment by millions of traders and hundreds of millions of billions of dollars flowing back and forth every day, minute by minute. This is like sort of like an objective decision that is being made by a group consciousness beyond the scope of any individual trader or any group of traders in the market. So what you're seeing there is essentially an assessment by our God of finance that there is a significantly larger default premium on AA than AAA right now. Now, I'm going to put up an article. I told you about this last class, I think. It was written 2 days ago by Carl Icahn, formerly a bigwig in the corporate industry. He wrote an article that is essentially, it's like what I've been telling you, that the stock market rise is completely phony, that if you look at the underlying numbers, earnings per share, revenue, blah, 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 all of that kind of stuff, there is no justification whatsoever for the way the stock markets are rising. So the implication would be that it is all being driven by money being poured into the banks by the Fed, and then those banks just turning around and pushing prices up of stocks, just buying in a frenzy without looking at the underlying fundamentals, which is what I've told you about. Look at the fundamentals. But that's not how the market works. The market works on a feeding frenzy basis. Banks buy, everyone buys. Banks sell, everyone sells. Hedge funds buy, everyone buys. Hedge funds sell, everyone sells. So what's going on here, though, is that if you look carefully at the bonds, there's a flag there. There is a very serious red flag in there that anything above that top tier of perfect companies is at some substantially greater risk of default than are the top tier companies, which would be much more likely to be protected by the government and by others if there were a serious crisis in them. But there you go. Look here. And I try to do this on sort of a logical basis. And this is the basis, by the way, of a question that I might ask on the first exam. Okay? Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. Okay? If I had, and I'm, you know what I could do, I suppose, in the absence of a marker that works. Seriously, there's not even one under here. Oh, God. Oh, the pain is bad. Let me try this. Maybe I could do it this way. Where's Word? Seriously? They don't have Word here even? Why would I use PowerPoint? I just want to write some numbers down.
You can still type on PowerPoint.
I avoid PowerPoint because people think that I'm... Huh? Okay. No, don't talk to me like your girlfriend. Word. Okay. Now, suppose that the coupon on, let's say, a 30-year bond, doesn't matter what it is. Suppose the coupon is 8.2%, okay? And let's say that the yield is 8.2%. Now, I'm tempted to challenge you and say, what's the price of it? But you might not be comfortable enough to know just instantly the price is par. It's the price is $1,000. The quote's 100. Because this bond is paying exactly the coupon that the market says it should. So this one would be this would be a bond that would sell exactly at par. 100 on the quote. Now, from that though, suppose that the yield was 7.6%. The market says it should pay 7.6%, but the coupon is actually 8.2%. So, would this bond sell at a discount or a premium to par? Market says pay us 7.6%. It gives you 8.2%. What? Premium. Bingo. Absolutely. Because this bond is being generous. So buyers are going to flow towards this bond, which will push its price up because demand will increase, price will increase. Okay? But on the other hand, suppose that the yield was 7%. In this case, the market says, pay us 8.7%. The coupon, the company says, no, we're paying 8.2%. Well, the market would punish the hell out of this bond, and it would sell at a discount to par. Maybe 98, 97 on the quote. It'd be a lower than 100 on the quote. Make sure you know that because I could ask you about that. What's the relationship between the price of a bond and its yield and coupon? Understand that in the midterms, I'm asking you for, not for calculations, but I'm asking you for a technical understanding that you can communicate in words to me. One sentence for most of them is all I want. And in a couple of cases, I'll say two sentences. Don't go over it because then I know you don't understand it. Now, here's the thing, though, interestingly enough. As bonds get closer to maturity, the spread between the coupon and the yield becomes less meaningful. Let me say that again. As a bond is getting closer and closer to maturity, the spread between the coupon and the yield becomes less relevant. All bonds, as they get closer and closer to the maturity date. Okay. You thought I should pay you 8.7%, but I paid you 8.2%. Now that's going to make you unhappy, you'll sell some of my paper and it'll draw the price down. It'll sell at a discount. But you see, that's because you could have been investing that money at a better rate for the same risk. But what happens if we are just 5 minutes from the time when I pay you back your $1,000 face value? Does it really matter to you, that spread, if I'm going to give you your money back in 5 minutes? If we're 5 minutes before the bond matures, that spread really doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's what we see with all bonds. No matter how far coupon and yield are from each other, they will all, whether it's a below or above, they all, as they're coming to their maturity date, approach 100 on the quote. They all approach $1,000. Because if you're 5 minutes away from getting $1,000, you can sell your instrument for $1,000. It doesn't really matter what all those disputes. Wait, okay. You're my son. Okay. We had some incredibly bad times when you were, you know, growing up. I swear the pimples were going to your brain, and you were 13, you were trolling the internet for porn. 14, you were actually in some of the porn that I was seeing. 16, you know, I found that meth lab in the garage, and you lied to me and said that it was your brother's, but I know your brother's 1 year old, so it couldn't have been his. Turned out it was, because he turned out to be a chemistry genius. He's taking care of me in my old age now. Okay, and 17, you were still kind of a jerk, an asshole, but you were calming down, and I saw this very strapping young man. And at the age of 18, you went off to college and you came home. And that was the day that I was having my heart attack. We were at the end, at the time of maturity. Oh, my son. Oh, come here. Let's get a huggy. Oh, God, I'm so proud of you. Dad, you're bleeding out of your mouth all over me. God. Okay, you see, it doesn't matter anymore. All that stuff. I try, okay? Give me a break. I'm trying to do things and enliven and make relevance out of it. But you see, and that's the way with a lot of instruments. As they come closer to the maturity date, the deviations of the peculiarities of the instrument itself become irrelevant, because you're going to get $1,000 back. So, of course, 5 minutes before the bond pays $1,000, you can sell it for $1,000. So regardless of which way whether it was up or down, you do see this profile. All bonds at the time of maturity approach par. They all do. They all just come toward it. Unless one exception. There's one exception: when a bond, as it approaches maturity, does not approach par. Does anyone know what that exception is? Say it. Bingo. Default. If the company is in default, it goes to zero. That's exactly right. So all bonds approach either par or zero. Most likely, we hope that most of them will approach par. But whether they approach par or zero becomes much, much more evident as you come close to the time of maturity. In other words, if a bond is going to pay, if you've got a speculative situation, this company is kind of dodgy, it's difficult. Well, the question, once you're like 5 minutes away from when the company's going to pay, have to pay the face value, you're going to know whether it's 100 or zero very quickly. So it's a little speculative out here. You might see a bond like of a company that's been in trouble. It'll be what might happen. If it's a normal company, it's going to have a very smooth path upward. And it's actually fairly predictable based upon the rating of the bond. But with a bond of a company that, are they going to survive or not, you might see that son of a dog. It's junk, so it's going to have a yield down here. It might stay down here very close to the time of maturity. And then right near, within days, it'll either snap up or drop based on whether it's clear that the bond will pay or the bond will tank. Okay? That's that part of it. Now, interestingly enough, I'm trying to think. Interest rate sensitivity. In other words, the price. Since interest rate sensitivity is another way of saying price volatility, because interest rates go up, price goes down. Interest rates go down, price goes up. So we're interested in bonds in how sensitive they are to the prevailing interest rate environment. Some bonds are actually very insensitive. They stay clean, their price stays very stable. And other bonds have rather nasty characteristics. One thing is clear. A bond that is farther from maturity is going to be more interest rate sensitive than a bond that is closer to maturity. Again, a bond that is farther from maturity will, all other things being constant, be more interest rate sensitive than a bond that is closer to maturity. You can even test this on a financial calculator. Two bonds, same coupon. One, say, 10 years out, the other 30 years out. Look at their price. Pick a yield to maturity close to the coupon. And then figure out the price of each. Then change that yield to maturity, that YTM. Make it something very different. Watch which one of those bonds has its price changed the most. It will be the longer one, the one that has longer time. Essentially because it has more time for that interest rate to affect the price of it. Woman, have you ever used a bullwhip? You haven't? Have you ever seen one? You know, you're saying, oh, I saw that in Shades of Grey. No, get that out of your mind. Okay, the thing about a bullwhip is that a short bullwhip, you have to do like that to get something to happen with it. But a bullwhip that is very long, and I've seen bullwhips that were, they're like, 15 feet long, all you have to do is go, and all of a sudden, over the, on the other end, to whack. Oh, that hurt, Carl. Okay. It's because of that greater length, it has that ability to translate a very small motion out here to something that will leave a mark. I mean, not that I would know personally, you know, I've read a lot. I know. Anyway, so that bullwhip sensitivity. As a bond is very long, a little tweak in interest rates will cause a very strong reaction in the current price of the bond. But one that has very little time left to maturity, you can have massive changes in interest rates, and the price will not change at all. So what that would mean as an investor, if you are not interested in volatility, you would probably be more interested in buying short bonds or notes or bonds that were close to maturity in the secondary market. You know, you can go out there and you can buy a 30-year bond that has 7 years left on its life. And if it's a high-grade AAA, when interest rates start changing, and they will soon, the effect of that on the price of the bond is not going to be all that severe. But if you go out there and you gobble up bonds, 30-year bonds that still have 25, 28 years left on them, Well, when that price, when those interest rates start to change, that price, the price of that bond is going to go all over the place. That's that interest rate sensitivity component of bonds. It's just the reality of how bonds work. And it's just a physics, a phenomenon of physics. There's more time for a given change in interest rates to have effect, and therefore that will be reflected in greater risk, which will have in turn the effect of making the price move more, more volatility in the instrument. The bottom line is this. Let me show you something. I'm going to see if I, interestingly enough, I'm going to do, let me get back here. I'm going to pull Google up here, and I'm going to attack this through Google because I can't remember the exact web address. Okay, bond quotes, FINRA, corporate bond quotes. Really? How hard can it be for this to show me the information I want quickly? I don't want that. I want what I was looking for initially. Okay. Okay, here we go. Now, I am in a place called FINRA. Most people who are not in finance, and hell, there are a lot of finance students in their fourth year, when I bring up FINRA, they look at me blank. You might want to look into it. They came here, they're going to be coming around looking to offer jobs soon. It's a powerful backroom, essentially like a self-policing body, oversight, information, education behind the financial services industry. And I didn't even know this, and apparently this is fairly recent. They started providing quotes on bonds and things like that, which is kind of cool because sometimes it's hard to find what I'm looking for. But look here. So, for example, we have, well, let me do Petróleos Mexicanos. There's its trading symbol. There's the coupon. In other words, if you buy one of these bonds, you'll get two checks a year, each for $27.50. 5.5, you'll get $55 a year on $1,000, and you'll get that in two installments. This is the maturity date. So this cat is out there a ways. This one is out there 29 years. This is probably was issued last year, It's investment grade, but it's actually kind of speculative investment grade. This is the Moody's. Okay, now, you see the first one would be Moody's rating system. The second would be Standard & Poor's. The third would be Fitch. You notice that Fitch doesn't rate Petróleos Mexicanos, okay? But Moody's and Standard & Poor's, they're about the same. This is investment grade, but it is a little speculative, hence a little higher. Let me find one that's got a really nice grade on it. Well, I'm not high yield. Well, high yield. High yield is another way of saying kind of like close to junk. It's not necessarily junk, but notice these credit ratings are lower, so the yields will be higher. Notice the coupons. See them that they are a little higher than the coupons here, riskier. Therefore, coupon is going to be a little bit higher on them. Now notice in this one, this is a swing over the day in the price of it. Do you see that these, and by the way, notice that those are quotes, not prices. Do you see that? You see the quotes instead of prices, like I warned you about? Notice that this thing sucks. I mean, this is selling at a major discount to par. And so therefore, look at the massive high yield. The yield, the market says this thing should be paying us 13.54%. The thing is paying 5.37%. Yeah, like we're going to pay close to par for that. You see it? Now, let me go down here. Those are convertibles. Those are those nasty little bastards. Let's go back up here. Find investment grade. Well, there's some good investment grade here. Just real quick here. Notice, for example, the yield on this Plains All-American Pipeline is 4.58%. And the yield is, the yield is 4.58%. The coupon is just a little bit better than that, 4.65%. Do you see that it's just selling at a slight premium to par? There it is. This is the stuff that I was talking about kind of theoretically. Here it is in live action. Almost par, just a little premium to par, just a slight 530 basis points. But that's because the market says it should be paying pretty close to what it is, paying a little better. But on the other hand, for this Kinder Morgan, the market says you should be paying about 5.54%. You're paying 4.3%. Bad bond. Bad bond. Quotes way below par. See? That's that market living, doing its thing. Here's 99. So I would guess that the yield and the coupon are fairly close. The yield's a little bit higher than the coupon. 2.16 on the yield. 2.05 on the coupon. Yeah. Not too much difference on. But the interesting thing is, though, that if I were to look at this guy right here, look at this. See this one? This is going to mature next year. Matter of fact, it's less than a year out. That would tell me that this thing is probably going to get closer and closer to par. That's one reason it's very close to par right now. Notice, look. Oh, sweet. Do you see the yield is 1.52%? Market says you should pay us 1.52%, but they're giving a yield, they're giving a coupon of 2.37%. But the market's saying, who cares? You see how this thing is nearly at par? That's because the thing is so close to maturity. All bonds approach par as the term approaches maturity. As the term approaches zero. So even though this coupon is a lot better than what the market says it should be, it doesn't matter anymore because the bond is so close to being paid off. But this guy, well, let me find one that's a little bit. Oh, here's another one. Oh, that's kind of scary as hell. Oh, see how much of a spread it takes between yield and coupon to get a really strong effect. This one is short. This one's only a year out. But it takes a hellacious spread, 1.05 on the yield versus 5% on the coupon, to get a premium to par of just $30 or so. Well, $38. But I'm trying to see if there's something really cool here. Wow. Look how far out this thing is. 29 years out, that's not really that much of a difference. The coupon's about 30 basis points above the yield, but look what a big premium to par it's paying on that. There's that other thing that I told you, that the longer the term to maturity, the more effect a spread will have. And sure enough, that coupon is not that much better, not that much better than the yield. But man, with 29 years left, look at how good the premium is on that thing. There you go. Those are great meat for all kinds of questions on midterm one. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.